in the Holy War. And I wanted to mention, I try to mention sometimes, occasionally, these beautiful woodcut illustrations that are in our book. The one that is opposite page 233, is the one depicting the sickness that's in man's soul. And my goodness, the more you study that picture, you see the wonderful skill of art and creativity, which are some men possess. There's an incredible paint woodcut there of the terrible condition of man's soul. It's very sad. The more you look at the picture, it actually makes you quite sad. And how appropriate, really, how appropriate that is for us, recognizing the sad state that man's soul was in at this point because of what? Because of sin. Because of disobedience, negligence, neglect. You know, this condition depicted here and depicted from Bunyan's writing, this condition is not something that just happens in an instant. It comes from our being careless and neglectful, and we're just allowing spiritual things to just slip. I mentioned that in prayer meeting Thursday night. I told the gentleman in the prayer meeting that the Lord has really just locked me into a text of scripture in Hebrews chapter 1 and chapter 2 and verse 1. He said, lest at any time we take heed there. He says, take heed. Take heed to the things that you've heard, lest at any time you should let them slip. And I think I'm going to be preparing a message on that text soon. She suggested that I put it in the Baptist Forum this time. We might do that if I can get it ready before. But anyway, we tend to let things slip. And it's that slipping that eventually ends us up in the sad plight that this picture depicts right here. Picking up on Bunyan's reading, he said, the sickness also did still greatly rage in man's soul, both among the captains and inhabitants of the town, and their enemies only were now lively and strong and likely to become the head whilst man's soul was made the tail. And then we pick up for our reading today the next paragraph. By this time, the letter last mentioned that was written by the Diabolians that yet lurked in the town of Mansoul was conveyed to Diabolus in the black den by the hand of Mr. Profane. He carried the letter by Hellgate Hill as afore and conveyed it to Cerberus, to his lord. But when Cerberus and Mr. Profane did meet, they were pleasantly as great as beggars, and thus they fell into discourse about Mansoul and about the project against her. Ah, old friend, quoth Cerberus, art thou come to Hellgate Hill again? By St. Mary, I'm glad to see thee. I couldn't help but think that that was just a little shot Bunyan took at Rome for him to employ that particular greeting. By St. Mary, I am glad to see thee. And, of course, then, yes, my lord, says Mr. Profane, yes, my lord, I am come again about the concerns of the town of Mansoul. Cerberus says, prithee, tell me, what condition is that town of Mansoul in at the present? Well, Mr. Profane proceeds to tell him, in a brave condition, My Lord, for us, and for my lords, the lords of this place, I trow, for they are greatly decayed as to godliness, and that is as well as our heart can wish. Their Lord is greatly out with them, and that doth also please us well. We have already also a foot in their dish, for our diabolian friends are laid in their bosoms, and what do we lack but to be masters of the place? Besides, our trusty friends in Mansoul are daily plotting to betray it to the lords of this town. Also, the sickness rages bitterly among them. And that which makes up all, we hope at last to prevail. Then said the dog of Hellgate, no time like this to assault them. I wish that the enterprise be followed close, and that the success desired may be soon effected. Yea, I wish it for the poor Diabolians' sake, that live in the continual fear of their lives in that traitorous town of Mansoul. He says, I wish for their sakes there were relief to this, and they could just go ahead and be swallowed up, because they're living every day in fear of their lives. And with good reason. Mr. Profane says, the contrivance is almost finished. The lords in Mansoul that are Diabolians are at it day and night, and the other are like chilly doves. They want heart to be concerned with their state, to consider that ruin is at hand. Besides, you may, yea, must think, when you put all things together, that there are many reasons that prevail with Diabolus to make what haste he can. Cerberus says, thou hast said as it is. I am glad tidings are at this pass. Go in, my brave profane, to my lords. They will give thee thy holy welcome as a coranto, as the whole of this kingdom will afford. I have sent thy letter in already. Now, of course, there's a marginal note there. If you have our particular version, the coranto is a lively, sprightly, happy dance. And he says, go ahead, go on in, Mr. Profane. I've already sent your letter ahead in ahead of you, and I'm sure that when you get in there, they're going to break into a very lively dance because they are all very happy with the news that they're hearing. So then Mr. Profane went into the den, and his lord Diabolus met him and saluted him with, welcome, my trusty servants. I have been made glad with thy letter. Then the rest of the lords of the pits gave him also their salutations. And then Profane, after obeisance made to them all, said, let man's soul be given to my lord Diabolus, and let him be king forever. And with that, the hollow belly and yawning gorge of hell gave so loud and hideous a groan, for that is the music of that place, that it made the mountains about it totter as if they would fall to pieces. So a loud and hideous groan, Bunyan identifies as being the music in that place. Now, after they had read and considered the letter, they consulted what answer to return. The note below in our commentary says, there is thought and forethought in hell, craft and subtlety in Satan. The note goes on, many minds and manifold devices seem to be in operation in the deep places of the pit. Satan is a wily general who weighs and counterweights his plans before he gives them ultimate effect. A very remarkable and suggestive description of this is here recorded by Bunyan, revealing the workings of the satanic mind, the agonies of the king of hell, while, as it were, travailing in birth, he brings forth the most deadly designs against the soul. In this deliberation, cautious counsels are delivered. We are taught this great truth, that Satan fears and respects man's extra vigilance. And that, if man does not watch and be sober, Satan is satisfied that any day will do for an assault. I think it is important to note here before we read on. Read that line again, that paragraph one. It's a one line, one sentence paragraph. Now, after they had read and considered the letter, they consulted what answer to return. And our commentator makes this point to us and warns us. There is, in his words, thought and forethought in the deliberations of hell against us. That's a sobering consideration, and one that we dare not lose it. Our enemy is subtle. He says he's full of craft and subtlety. It's not random, and we can't afford the luxury of assuming that our enemy is random and that there is no plot or plan. It's very dangerous, very crafty, very wily, very planning, and I can assure you when we are not even thinking about Satan or our enemies, when we are not even thinking about them, they are thinking about us and what to do to stop us, to stumble us, to trip us up. That's a point well worth taking to heart. And, of course, our commentator does pick it up for that reason. Bunyan goes on and says, and the first that did speak to him was Lucifer. Now, here you've got Diabolus. You've got, there's actually conversations here. In fact, over, there's a woodcut opposite page 236. I guess that's, yes, that is 238, but there's no numbering on those pages. There is a woodcut opposite 236. And it's Mr. Profane speaking to, I guess, what you might want to call the unholy trinity. Because from the reading of the text, the artist picked up on the three different names of the same person we call Satan. There is Diabolus, there's Beelzebub, and there's Apollyon. All three of these are talked about, and I don't know which is meant to be which in this picture. I could assume, but I'm only assuming. At any rate, all three are represented as three different people. We all know, of course, that to be three different names of the same person, which is Satan, that fallen angel. But they are the three characters, Diabolus, Beelzebub, and Apollyon. And so he says that the first to speak was, and Lucifer. I left the name out. The first to speak was Lucifer. Then said he, the first project of the Diabolians in man's soul is likely to be lucky and to take. Namely, that they will, by all the means and means they can, by all the ways and means they can, make man's soul yet more vile and filthy. no way to destroy a soul like this. No better way to destroy a soul than this. Make the soul as vile and filthy as possible. That was the plan. Now, somebody, Scoot, maybe will you look at Numbers 31 and verse 16. We don't read all the verses that are given to us in reference, Bunyan's references, but I do want to read this one before we read on. Read us Numbers 31, 16. Okay, these caused the congregation of the Lord to sin, to transgress, in the matter of Baal, and he caused them, read that phrase again, he caused them. There you go. These caused them to commit trespass. These caused them to commit trespass. And so Bunyan refers to that text when he says, our old friend Balaam went this way and prospered many years ago. He's referring to that record which Scoot just read for us in Numbers, that record of what happened to Israel. In this conversation, Lucifer says that he recommends that first plan that was put forward, namely to make man's soul as vile and filthy as possible. Then he says, because that plan we know works. And it works because our old friend Balaam went this way and prospered many years ago. We have an example of how this happened before. He's saying. Let this therefore stand with us for a maxim, and be to die volumes for a general rule in all ages. For nothing can make this to fail but grace, in which I would hope that this town has no share. Now, let's don't go too fast here. He says, let's make this a maxim, a motto, if you please, for all divines for the ages to come. What? What is the maxim? What maxim? What is the motto? Somebody give it to me in a few words, maybe in your own words. Make man's soul as vile and filthy as you can. Pollute the reservoir, if you please. Poison the fountain. Make him as vile as you can. Let that be, says Lucifer, let that be the maxim for all diabolians, for all the ages to come. Make man as vile as you can. That's the maxim. And then, I want you to notice, that he by his own, even Satan knows, Lucifer testifies, that there is one thing that will spoil this plan. Grace. Nothing can make this fail but grace. Even Satan knows that grace will confound his ploys. Well, there's a lot of rich theology in this brief text this morning. A lot of rich theology here. The statement I just made can be taken two different ways or applied two different ways. I said even Satan knows that God's grace will confound his ploys. We've got Baptists that don't believe that. Even Satan knows that God's grace, when he has purposed to extend it to any individual, he will confound the ploys of Satan. Their salvation is certain. It will not fail. And then there's this other fact that Satan knows that. Satan knows that. For nothing can make this fail but grace, in which I would hope this town has no share. I hope that they're not the objects of grace, because if they are, we're not going to be able to save them, take them. Mason said, sin continued in is of a hardening nature. God will bring back his repentant people who have forsaken his ways with scourges, but the impenitent backslider must fall irrecoverably. Now you see, folks used to believe that if a man turns back and stays in his sin and dies in it, he's lost. None of this once saved, always saved doctrine of modern Baptists. 1 John chapter 3, you read and study for yourself. 1 John chapter 3 talks about this at length. Sin that remains will harden. And if the sinner is impenitent until the end, they are lost. They were never partakers in grace. Because nothing can cause this plan to fail but grace. But grace will make it fail. But whether to fall upon them on a market day because of their cumber in business, that I would should be under debate. You remember, it seemed earlier in their conversations, they pretty much settled on the use of market day to do this attack. Well, now it comes back up in this unholy trinity. It comes back up for discussion again. And there is more reason why this head should be debated than why some other should. Because upon this will turn the whole of what we shall attempt. So the whole success or failure of their plot rests on when they initiate this attack. So he's saying this is a very important point, and I would like for us to go back and discuss it again, whether or not to do this on a market day. If we time, says Bunyan, says Lucifer through the pen of Bunyan, if we time not our business well, our whole project may fail. Our friends, the Diabolians, say that a market day is best, for then will man's soul be most busy and have fewest thoughts of a surprise. But what if also they should double their guard on those days? And methinks nature and reason should teach them to do it. And what if they should keep such a watch on those days as the necessity of their present case doth require? Yea, what if their men should be always in arms on those days? Then you may, my lords, be disappointed in your attempts, and may bring our friends in the town to utter danger of unavoidable ruin. Now let me read a note, and then I'll ask a question. Let's back up to the commentator's note. He says, when man is with the heart serving mammon, he cannot be serving Christ. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Yes, that's right. That's what I want to read. When man is with the heart serving mammon, he cannot be serving Christ. Accordingly, the diabolic opportunity would seem to fall most likely on a market day. Yet, the state of the soul, as described in this phase of its experience, was not a state of utter abandonment to sin, not yet. You see, man's soul is very sick, very contaminated, but even the diabolians have said we need to make it more vile to guarantee our success. And it is not yet completely given over. So the commentator says, it was not a state of utter abandonment to sin, or a determined condition of unwatchfulness. The soul, still possessed of some small remnant of grace, would take alarm upon a known emergency, and is perhaps not so far gone in its decline of faith and love as to omit to take precautions on special occasions. Hence, the wily suggestions of Lucifer in the Diabolian Council, by which Bunyan would have us to understand somewhat of the devices of Satan in well measuring his ground, maturing his plans, and making provision against the vigilance of the soul. So, it's not without sound reason that Lucifer has suggested that we go back, says he, we need to go back to this subject of launching this attack on market day. I'm not thoroughly convinced, he's saying, that that's altogether the smartest thing to do. So I put it to you. What say you? What do you say to this matter of concern that Lucifer has raised? Is it a good idea, or is it not? Well, the implication, at least implication, from Bunyan, is that the soul, as I said, as the commentator said, is not yet graceless, is not without grace altogether. And it is, because of that grace, possible to be frightened into a more strict watchfulness, in which case any plan of its destruction will fail. So, it seems a reasonable thing that Lucifer has raised this question about market day. You know what frightens me is to think that there have been many times in my life when this very discussion was being had about me. I was the subject of this discussion, and it was anybody's guess whether there was enough grace there. Unsure, was it going to be safe to launch an attack or not? The truth is, there just wasn't enough evidence to make the question clear. That's sad. Well, then said the great Beelzebub. Here's Beelzebub now. There is something in what my Lord has said, but his conjecture may or may not fall out. Nor hath my Lord laid it down as that which must not be receded from, He didn't say, let's don't do this. He just said, let's discuss it. For I know that he said it only to provoke to a warm debate thereby. Therefore, we must understand if we can, whether the town of Mansoul has such sense and knowledge of her decayed state and of the design that we have on foot against her, as doth provoke her to set a watch and ward at her gates, to double them on market days. So Beelzebub says, all right, my friend Lucifer has not said, don't do this. He wants us to debate it. So he says, to bring this matter into sharper focus for us, he says, it comes down to this. We need to, if we can, we need to settle this one question. Is man's soul yet in a state so decayed that she does not know what we're planning, and she's not alert? Or is she yet in a position that she does know these things, and she's got enough sense to double her guard on a market day? This is what we need to know. Okay? Pretty thorough. There's some pretty thorough discussion going on here. But if after inquiry made, it shall be found that they are asleep, then any day will do. But a market day is best. And this is my judgment in the case. Murder said, learn wisdom from the devil. Learn wisdom from the devil. Nature and reason should teach men to be doubly on their guard when they are engaged in the world. Men should be always in arms on those days. Would to God this hint were duly regarded in our country on market days, and in London always, where every day in the week is a market day. Remember, we talked about that before. I talked to you before about the fact we live in a country where market days every day. And would to God, says Murder, that we had the wisdom to take a page from the book of the devil here and realize the urgency of doubling our guard on market day. And if every day is a market day, then that's every day for us. Then quote Diabolus, how should we know this? How can we find this out? How can we get this answer? And it was answered, inquire about it at the mouth of Mr. Profane. So Profane was called in, and he was asked the question, and he made his answer as follows. Now Mr. Profane is being consulted. They've narrowed this thing down to a simple question. Is man's soul alert enough? Have they got enough sense to double their guard on market day or not? Or are they completely asleep, in which case it doesn't matter what day? That's the question. Well, they don't know how to answer the question. So they said, let's call in Mr. Profane. Let's ask the question to him. Our commentator says, everything seems to depend on man's spirit of watchfulness and prayer. Vigilance is on the lookout for a threatened or approaching danger, and prayer calls in the aid of the king in need, in a time of need. Accordingly, the council of hell pauses for a moment to make inquiry as to the spirit of man's soul in these respects. The naughtiness of man, that is Mr. Profane, is the informant on this occasion, and it reports nothing good respecting man's soul, with one exception. We haven't read it yet. One exception. Prayer. Profane reports an evident decline of faith and love and departure from the Lord, and though man's soul prays, yet there is no improvement or reformation of life, but still, he cannot deny that man's soul is given to prayer. Now listen to his answer. Profane is called in. He's asked the question. Here's his answer. My lords, so far as I can gather, this is at present the condition of man's soul. They are decayed in faith and love. Emmanuel, their prince, has given them the back. They send often by petition to fetch him again, but he maketh not haste to answer their request, nor is there much of reformation among them. And then Diabolus responds, I am glad that they were backward of reformation, but yet I am afraid of their petition. So this has put the whole project on a pause. All the councils of hell come to this conclusion. We need to know what the state of this soul is. And Mr. Profane, who's been there, reports, well, I can tell you, sirs, it's in a terrible condition. But they have not ceased sending petitions to Emmanuel. Oh, blessed saint, can I just encourage you? Don't quit sending. Don't quit sending messages to Emmanuel. Hell fears this. Hell knows this cannot go well for them. These petitions keep going up. But yet I am afraid of their petitioning. However, their looseness of life is a sign that there is not much heart in what they do. And without the heart, things are a little worse. But go on, my masters. I will divert you, my lords, no longer. Afraid of their petitions. Look at the note below. Still man's soul prays, and this is what most discourages Diabolus. True, the prayer was unheeded, unanswered, but still it was prayer. Behold, he prayed. Yea, the prayer was even weak and feeble, but still it was prayer. How true are the words of Montgomery's beautiful hymn, and Satan trembles when he sees the weakest saint upon his knees. That the soul prays at all at such a crisis of its forlorn hope is owing altogether to the still abiding of godly fear in the heart. He urges the soul ever on to prayer, always to pray and not to faint. It is the greatest experiment of remaining faith and fear, prayer to the offended prince. What a testimony. What a testimony to us all that we fail not in the matter pray. Well, Beelzebub says, if the case be so with man's soul, as Mr. Profane has described it to be, it will be no great matter what day we assault it. Not their prayers nor their power will do them much service. Well, guess what? He was wrong. They misjudged, they miscalculated. wrong about that. It is true that they were in a terrible state, and it is true that they didn't have a good sense to double their guard on market day. It is true that they were not wise at all. All the things they said were true, except they had just reason to fear their prayers, more reason than they understood, because petitions were still going to the prince. They were still petitioning for help. And in the worst of my days, I've never known a time that I did not secretly in my heart cry out, God help me. God help me. Even when I knew my town was sick, weak, sick, God help me. The reason that remains in the believer, our commentator very wisely points out to us, is because Mr. Godly Fear is still there. He's still there. And he's still counseling the town to send these petitions. That's what I would call abiding grace. Thank God for his grace indwelling us. And that is not to our credit. We have no share in the glory of that. That is altogether his sovereign work. Godly Fear, still living. We'll take up there next week.